good afternoon, good evening, everyone. I was going to yell, hi, paradigm shifters, but that would work, wouldn't it? Who's the paradigm shifter? Is somebody who's making a difference in the collective on the planet at this time in the history of the world. And today we're very fortunate to have with us Mark Allen of Visionary Business, An Entrepreneur's Guide to Success, and more than that, the entrepreneur, I think you're the business owner, aren't you, of New World Library Publishing?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, welcome to the show, Mark.
Well, thank you, Veronica.
I'm really excited to talk to you, and it's a strange time on the planet for business, and we hear all the time lately that it's the time to become entrepreneurial and the time for collaboration, the time for greening, the time for sustainability. Is that what you're doing, all of the above?
Yes, definitely, all of the above.
Wow. Were you born that way?
We were one of the first companies to have solar in our offices. We were one of the first to use 100% recycled post-consumer waste paper for all our books.
Yay.
We've tried to lighten our imprint on the earth.
Wow, that's wonderful. So, like, were you always, I know you're a 60s guy, were you active in the 60s?
Yeah. I was involved in what we call the spiritual smorgasbord of Northern California in the 60s.
Oh, great. Well, what a learning curve that was, huh?
Yeah.
In any case, let's talk about how you got, this is called a socially responsible business, and you work with sustainability, and let me see, I'm going to read here, it says, it's a good line, a business that truly cares about the well-being of its employees, community, and the environment. And I know that you started it after you hit a wall, didn't you, in another business?
Yes.
Would you like to tell everybody the story of how you, I would say, awakened to this new approach?
To me, the day that changed my life was the day I turned 30. Because I woke up in a state of shock realizing I wasn't a kid anymore. Somehow through my 20s, I felt like a kid and acted like a kid. And looking back, I had no real goals. I just wandered around trying this, trying that.
And the spiritual smorgasbord, right?
Yeah. And I was born with something. We're all born with some kind of unique gift. And I knew from birth it was important to do what I love to do. That was the piece of the puzzle I had. And that has served me so well over the years.
Ah.
So in my 20s, I did what I loved to do. I didn't listen to my well-meaning parents or anybody else. I just really did what I was passionate about. But I had no idea how to be successful doing it. Then the day I turned 30, I woke up in a state of shock and looked at my life. And I spent much of the day pacing up and down my little slum apartment in Oakland, California. I had no job. I had no money. I had no support from family. I realized I had no direction in life.
Uh-huh.
And that's the day that changed my life. I remembered in my early 20s, we'd done a back-to-the-land experiment that had been a disaster. Because, again, we didn't really have clear goals or anything. But one night, I remembered we were sitting around a fire, and this one couple said, let's play this game we played at church camp. Let's imagine 5 years have passed and everything has gone as well as you could imagine. What would your life look like? And when I thought about it, I didn't remember a word I said at 22 or whatever I was.
Mm-hmm.
So it had no impact on my life whatsoever. But the day I turned 30, I thought, this is a good idea. And this time I took a sheet of paper and I wrote it down. I put ideal scene at the top and wrote down my dream. And much to my amazement, because I'd never had any interest in business, I'd been an actor, I'd been a musician, I'd been a Zen student, I'd tried that back-to-the-land thing, I wandered around, I was fired as a busboy and dishwasher for being too slow, and fired as a typesetter for not showing up on time, and just everything in my 20s fell apart. But the day I turned 30, I thought, what do I really want? That's the first day I really set a clear goal. And much to my amazement, I wrote, I have a publishing company that cruises along very successfully, publishing my books and other people's books and my music and other people's music.
Oh, that's right. You're a musician as well, aren't you?
Right. I've always played music since I was a kid, too. So there's has always been that part of it.
What kind of music, like a guitar? And?
Yeah, mostly piano I play. And I've got 8 albums out on a company called Watercourse Media.
Oh, wow.
That you can go sample the albums. Watercourse Media. I've got 5 albums, and then 3 are from other people that I know and love. And so I've done music all my life. But the day I turned 30, I actually decided to record music and get it out there and start writing books and get them out there and set up a publishing company. And, of course, as soon as I even dared to dream it, I was just overwhelmed with doubts and fears, nearly paralyzed.
I bet you were.
They just rushed in. I remember them so vividly. They were saying, that's way too much, Mark. You know, just pick one thing and focus on that. But when I dared dream my ideal, I went back and said, no, this is supposed to be my ideal. Ideally, I want lots of success, but I also want a life of ease.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally, I don't want to work too hard. I only want to work when I feel like it. And that
enough.
Became an important part of my ideal, to only work when I felt like it, which meant I don't do mornings. I'm not a morning person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do Mondays. I never liked Mondays. Now they're my favorite day because I take every Monday just off to myself.
Oh, great. Good for you.
And, so that was really the day I started a company with no money. I just made the goal of starting a company somehow. Then the next steps became obvious. It was, you know, nothing about business, learn about business and talk to people that know more than I do. And I knew nothing about financing it. And the only thing I could think of was get some kind of job and stick with the job long enough to save 20% and put into your publishing that you do on the side. And that's exactly what I did.
Did you know how to publish?
I had learned how to typeset
when
I spent some time at a Tibetan center in Berkeley.
Hmm.
It wasn't great for my spiritual life, but it was great for my business life.
Isn't that an interesting conundrum there?
Yeah, the Lama was a great business person.
Hmm.
And he built this big press and publishing company, and I learned typesetting, and I watched what they were doing in the publishing company. So I learned some things just kind of by osmosis. But I didn't know the first thing about how do you set up a business? How do you organize it? Don't you have to register with the county? Don't you need money? I was totally clueless and a complete poverty case.
Well, also, were you trying to write a book at the same time?
Yeah.
Do your music?
Yep, I was.
Were you
started playing and recording my music then, too.
Wow. And what kind of a book were you writing?
Well, the first book I did came out of these seminars. I'd been kind of tricked into leading a seminar with my friend Shakti Gawain, who ended up writing our best-selling early book and really helped launch the company. But she and I were supposed to assist this guy in a 5-day seminar that culminated in New Year's. And it was a paying gig for us. We were broke, so we just did it for the money. Well, he got weirder and weirder and weirder before the seminar, and then 10 minutes before, we were in the kitchen, and he said, I can't handle this, and he left. And so Shakti and I led a seminar. We never would have had the courage to do it, but we just threw together everything we learned in our spiritual smorgasbord, and we led this seminar. And I kept running upstairs and typing up notes because I wanted to give people notes so they'd remember these exercises we were leading. And the notes turned into our first book.
Oh, wow. The book that we all know and love?
Well, no. The first one you probably don't know is called Reunion Tools for Transformation. And it only sold about, over the years we started selling it, I actually literally looked up book and published in the dictionary to see if I'd published a book. And we got it into some stores, and then we found a little distributor, and it just grew. But we sold about 12,000 copies over maybe a decade, and then it faded out to nothing, so it went out of print. But then Shakti took the same stuff in that book, the stuff we had been teaching, and wrote a book called Creative Visualization.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of.
That's the one, right? That's the one
you.
Everybody knows. It just the entire company was Shaki and I. We had no marketing. I don't think we sent out one review copy or anything. But we just got it into some local stores, and then we got a little distributor, and it started just selling by word of mouth.
Wow. And hey, Mark, you know, that was real paradigm shifting then, too, wasn't it?
It was. Oh. That I have met literally hundreds of people have said to me over the years, that's the first book I read, and it changed my life.
Yep. That really was a real cranker.
Yeah.
Well, you can keep going, but I want to ask you, who was Bernie?
Oh, yeah, Bernie. Well, then, what happened was we struggled along, losing money, and another friend joined us, so there were three of us in the company, and he had taken this little six-week business course in the summer, and I said, what'd you learn? He said, I learned how to do a business plan. And I said, what's that? I'd never heard the phrase. And he said, he doesn't remember this conversation. I remember it vividly. He said, oh, it's a vehicle for raising money. And I said, let's do it. And he looked around my slum apartment, my one-room little hole in the wall in Oakland, $65 a month rent. We were scrounging to get together every month. And he said, are you kidding? Who would lend us money? And I couldn't think of anyone. We didn't know anyone with any money. But I just had this feeling. I remembered the phrase, you know, later the movie became famous for that phrase, build it and they will come.
Right.
And that's kind of what I felt. I thought, well, let's write it and maybe we'll find somebody.
Hmm.
And we literally, he had a copy of an old plan and we spent about, it was either 6 months or 9 months, I don't even remember, but we copied the plan and just changed it for our company.
But wait a minute, Mark, weren't you able to use the creative visualization that you and Shaki had been teaching?
Well, that's what we were doing in a way. Mm-hmm. I realized the next step was to make a concrete plan.
Mm-hmm.
And it forces you to visualize very clearly. We did the numbers, we did the estimates of sales, which were totally blue sky because we had very few sales. Our first year, our total sales for our company were $800. And then our second year were $3,000 gross sales for the whole company.
Mm-hmm.
Then our third year, that's when we got creative visualization out in the beginning, and they were $30,000.
Wow.
And that's when we did the plan. And still, you can't have many employees or do much on $30,000.
No, you can't.
But
that was a giant leap.
It was a giant leap, right. And so with the plan, we imagined real big leaps. And it took us months to write it. We kept forgetting to add expenses like insurance, accounting, all these things I didn't know anything about. And we finally finished the plan, and literally a couple days after we finished the plan, we'd hired this woman to help with shipping. And then I got a call out of the blue. I think it was a day or two after we finished the plan. And the call was this guy saying, oh, Mark, you don't know me. My name is Elliot. I'm the boyfriend of the woman you just hired. And I know this old guy named Bernie. And he just happened to ask me if I knew of any startup publishing companies that wanted some capital. He said, are you looking for some capital? And I said, yeah. And he said, do you have a plan? And I said, of course. We had just finished it. I mean, is that a coincidence or what?
Oh, really?
I found over and over, once you make a plan, a clear plan, and take any little steps toward it, even the tiniest ones, some coincidences will happen that will help you get closer to that plan.
This is so fun, isn't it?
It is. Mm-hmm. It really is.
So tell us about Bernie.
Then I met Bernie, and he was this great guy, this old guy. He'd had a hotel in Havana. And he was just a storyteller. Every meeting would be 3 or 4 hours. And we'd talk about the business for maybe 15 minutes. And we'd always have lunch. He had an office in a hotel on a mezzanine. So we'd sit there overlooking the balcony at this table outside his hotel room. I never even went in there. I don't know what was in there. But we always sat outside. And he'd have lunch delivered, and he'd always have a ham sandwich on white bread And he was an old Jewish guy. You know, he's not supposed to eat ham, I don't think. But, oh, he had stories of rubbing shoulders with the mafia. And he owned a hotel in Havana before Castro took over. He had amazing stories. And then he looked at my plan and basically told me to rewrite it and add more for contingencies because I wasn't asking for enough. And I did that and came back. And then he said, okay, I'll roll the dice with you, he said.
Oh, wow, good.
Yeah.
Didn't he teach you a lot about responsibility and sustainability and whatever?
He definitely taught me a lot. He was a very good early mentor.
Mm-hmm.
The first version of Visionary Business I wrote was the actual story, the way it really happened. And in reality, I didn't have that many meetings with Bernie, and he didn't teach me nearly everything he teaches me in the book. But once I'd written it, I wrote it for my own employees at first to really show them how my company got going and its values. And once I'd written it, it was too confusing for people with too many people coming in and just contributing one phrase that changed my life, you know, and then leaving. So I ended up fictionalizing it and putting it all in Bernie's mouth. Everything I learned, everything I invented, everything I put in Bernie's mouth. So he became kind of a super mentor in fiction.
Well, let's take a look. This is, the owners of a business have a great responsibility toward their employees and their communities and their environment. I love that.
Yeah.
Just as they want to create happy and healthy lives for themselves, owners are responsible for creating happy and healthy lives for their employees.
Yep, there is a responsibility, a definite responsibility. Once you have one employee, you have my CFO here, who started as a bookkeeper and worked her way up to chief financial officer because she showed me how to be profitable and be successful. But she once sat me down and said, you know, Mark, you have a fiduciary responsibility to your employees and authors. And I wasn't even sure what fiduciary meant.
What exactly does it mean?
Well, yeah, I went and looked it up. I thought it meant financial, coming from her. And it does imply financial, but mostly it has to do with trust.
Hmm.
You have, when you get one employee, they trust you. You have an agreement with them to pay them on time. You know, they have an agreement with you to do a certain job. You have an agreement with them to pay them on time. And what I've found really works to make them wealthy over the long run, with a pension plan and with profit sharing, the key to real success for any business owner, or even the book's been very good for even artists and just career people that are self-employed as well. They've found a great value in it. But if you have a small business with one or two employees, if you set it up with profit sharing and set it up so that employee can amass wealth over time, then you will build a powerful business. And again, I'm my soapbox about this throughout Visionary Business and any time I talk. Every company with any number of employees should have profit sharing. There's just no reason not to. I can absolutely show people on paper, because I give half my profits to my employees, I make way more than twice the profits I would make. So it's a win-win deal.
That's wonderful, isn't it? You told me, we were talking briefly today, and you told me that you hit the wall at one point with your business.
Yeah, 5 years.
You want to tell that story?
Right. 5 years into it. So we got Bernie's financing. We burned through that money. He actually helped finance a distribution company we set up and were part owners of. But I didn't get involved with it. In hindsight, I really should have, because it turns out they were horribly managed, and they went bankrupt and didn't pay us for 6 months' worth of distribution. So we were on the verge of bankruptcy. I was propping it up through just a few direct mail sales we had, and credit cards. I went $65,000 in credit card debt.
Wow.
And this was the early 80s when $65,000 was a lot more money than it is today. And that's when I hit my financial low. And then at that time, really, three things happened that completely turned the company around. As I look back on it, I think one of the most important things, maybe the most important thing, was simply a phrase I heard on the radio. I was driving into work. We were really struggling. We were on the verge of bankruptcy. And I heard this phrase. I didn't even know who said it. Someone later said, oh, that was Napoleon Hill in Think and Grow Rich. But all I heard were the words, within every adversity is an equal or greater benefit. And I pulled over and wrote those down in big words, and I put it up on my wall right above my phone. Then I added, within every problem is an opportunity. That started turning my thinking around. People kept coming in to my office, Mark, we got another problem. And I'd acknowledge the problem. Yes, we were almost bankrupt. But I started asking, what are the opportunities here? What possible benefits? And then later on, we actually published a book called The Bhagavad Gita, one of the oldest texts ever written. And in our translation of it, they had a phrase, even in the knocks of life, we can find great gifts.
Hmm.
So I added that to my list of things. And for years and years, whenever a problem arises, whenever an apparent obstacle comes, I'll kick back, acknowledge the problem, but then I'll literally relax and think, what benefits are there in this situation? What opportunities? What gifts?
So what benefits and opportunities did you find when you were right at nose-to-nose with bankruptcy?
It's amazing. I find when you ask that question, you get answers. And, of course, you have to ask it and get your own answers. For me, though, the first thing I got is I realized I was not taking responsibility for the company I'd started. I was always looking for somebody with more experience. I felt like an uneducated little kid,
mm-hmm.
and I was looking for somebody else with more experience to come along and tell me what to do. Well, that hadn't happened in the publishing. With the distribution company, a guy had come along with 25 years of experience, and I just let him do his thing, and he ran it into the ground.
Hmm.
And I got, a benefit for me was beginning to trust myself and realizing that I had to be responsible. I had to be the experienced person. I had to trust my own intuition. And then I started realizing it's all very simple. Running a business is very simple. If you're a parent, being a parent is much harder and more challenging.
Are you a parent?
Yes, I'm a parent.
So you know.
So I know, yes. Running a business, the rules have not changed in hundreds of years. And it's not complex at all. You just need a good product or service, and there the key is do what you love to do. Make that work. You need some way to sell or market it. There the key is keep trying this, keep trying that, keep trying all these different things. There are infinite ways you can sell and market your work. And then you have to have financial control. That's what took me 5 years to really get. And that's another thing that happened right about the same time that I started looking for opportunities. The right person came along financially for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then the right person came along marketing. And looking back over 25 years as I wrote Visionary Business, gave me this perspective. And one thing that really came to mind, and I think I can tell your, I could put it in these words for your audience, but
okay.
Before I hit that financial low and before I asked what are the benefits, I was always putting out this sort of vibe to the world. It's like, I need someone to help me. I don't know what I'm doing. Help me out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm inexperienced. That was the energy I was putting out. Those were the thoughts. And so the people I attracted were not really very helpful people. They had their own problems. Once I started really grasping that there were opportunities here, there were benefits, really focusing on those things, my thoughts shifted. I started thinking, you know, we've got a potentially great opportunity in this company to develop something. As soon as I started thinking that, I brought in people to run the finance side and the marketing side, the two areas I'm not interested in the least.
Hmm.
I brought in people that saw the opportunity.
So you didn't have to become a financial expert. You needed to bring in a financial expert.
Right. Mm-hmm. I finally brought in this woman. Education was just, she'd worked in a bank, and then she'd been a bookkeeper for some small businesses.
Hmm.
but she knew about financial control. And she studied the publishing industry, and she whipped me in shape.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
What's the learn to dance? Is that being resilient or responding to change, or what is that?
Right. I love that, too. That's another phrase that really helped turn things around when I was struggling. On the radio again, I heard an interview with the CEO of PepsiCo, and he had, over the last 6 years, increased profits by over 30% per year, each year, which is quite remarkable for a huge multi-billion-dollar, you know, mega conglomerate.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked him what his secret was, and he said, "I just have three rules: love change, learn to dance, and leave J. Edgar Hoover behind."
So you love change, learn to dance. Now, what does leave J. Edgar Hoover behind?
J. Edgar Hoover was known for his top-down management and his pyramid and his command change and his micromanaging of agents in the field, telling them what to do. And now, I mean, all the big companies have gotten it now. A far better way to manage is to flatten the pyramid. It's to set up entrepreneurial groups. It's to motivate every person to figure out what needs to be done, rather than have somebody sitting at the top in an office trying to tell them what to do.
Does that mean profit sharing?
Definitely, it means profit. To me, it means profit sharing, and mm-hmm. I don't know why every business doesn't do it. But if you add profit sharing to that, if you flatten the pyramid, if you say everybody in this company is contributing an essential thing, we're all, in a way, equally as important. It's a chain we put together, this powerful chain that goes from acquiring a book all the way through producing it and then selling it and then doing all the back end and paying all the royalties and doing all the accounting. And it's a big chain, and you can blow it at any position. You know, you can, if you have a great book with a terrible cover, that can hurt it. If the editing's sloppy, that can hurt it.
So do you have people that actually create the book and do the editing and all of that stuff?
Yes. Yeah, mm-hmm. We have all that, and they're all vitally important.
And was it, you know, you wanted to be, even when you were a little one, you wanted to be doing stuff that you loved. Were you fascinated by all that? What were you fascinated by?
I was fascinated by the book production end. I don't do it anymore, but at first I did all the production. I loved it. I did the typesetting, and I at that time you had to paste up each page, and then I handled even the printing, which I wasn't that good at.
Mm-hmm.
So I got people better than me at handling printing, because I'm not organized at all, and I'm not a detail person.
Mm, you're a musician.
I'm a musician, and I'm good at, you know, right brain and big picture thinking. But I have literally surrounded myself with people who are far more organized than I am, far more capable. Many are far more intelligent than I am. So
I think that's really smart, isn't it? To always make your people smarter than you are, then you don't have to be everything.
Yeah, and have them manage their position, and then share profits with them.
You've got a bunch of really major books that you've published, right?
Yeah, well, after we had Creative Visualization, I remember it. Once it hit 1 million copies, it sort of snowballed, and it entered the whole mass consciousness somehow. It was about that number, about 1 million copies. Now we've sold over 3 million of these. In the U.S. alone, and it's in about 35 foreign countries.
Wow.
So it's all around the world. And once we had a real successful book like that, then agents and authors just started calling and mailing us ideas.
And so what have you published?
Oh, boy,
wait a sec, I'm going to get a sense of time. When did it start to really expand?
When did we start to really expand?
Yeah.
It was very shortly after the financial low.
Mm-hmm.
Which I hit at about 35. That was so, it was about almost 5 years. My first 5 years were struggle and chaos and anxiety, because I didn't know the things that I now know and teach.
Uh-huh.
I often think, if I would have known then what I know now, that 5 years would have been more like 2 years of...
Is that like youth is wasted on the young?
Well, I don't know about that. That's kind of judgmental. It's wonderful being young, and it's wonderful being older. It does get emotionally a lot easier being older.
It sure does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So we're looking at the 90s, are we?
Actually, we started in the late 70s.
Oh, okay.
We started in 77. I actually started it on my birthday, July 1st, 1976, the day I turned 30. But nothing happened that first 6 months. I didn't get anything out. In 77 then, we started with our first little books. I had an album called Breathe and a book called Reunion. And our first few things got out. And then...
And they were both yours, both the album and the book?
They were both mine, yeah.
Yay! Good for you!
Right, I did the first three books that we published, and then the fourth book was Creative Visualization by Sharky Goin.
Oh, and was your writing picking up speed? Were you able to kind of sit down and write a book? A lot of people can't do that.
I sort of got tricked into it with Reunion, so I never had that problem because for Reunion, I literally would run upstairs and type up some pages during the seminar we were leading.
Nope.
And at night, I'd summarize what we learned that day. And then I just ran down to Kinko's and made copies. And it was so fat, we put a little funky binding on there. And that was our first book. And
great.
I literally looked up book and published it at Dictionary. And I thought, oh, I published a book. Oh, okay. I wrote a book. So it sneaked up on me. So I never had that problem then.
So that was back quite a ways, eh?
Quite a ways, yes. 30-some years now.
Okay, so when you started to get, like, bigger books, bigger names, or more and more big names, you were already creating a big name with Shakti, right?
Yeah, and then we got Deepak Chopra's best book. I'm very proud of the fact that our company published what is still his best-selling book, The Seven Spiritual Laws of Success.
Did you read it?
We published, read it. I edited it.
Ate it for dinner, right?
I love that book.
Did it become a huge impact on your world?
Yeah, that really, there we had it on the New York Times bestseller list for 70 weeks.
Wow.
And it really made the company take a quantum leap.
Wow.
And then in the early part of this decade, we still have The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, which is my favorite book of all time. And that is still on the New York Times bestseller list. It's been there for 66 weeks, I think.
Wow, that's just been a huge seller, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's great. So tell me this. I want to jump. Well, I'd like to ask you more about books, but I want to also, this is an economic time which is really challenging. Do you have anything to say to people about being entrepreneurial or running a business at this point?
Yeah, I sure do. I often tell people, even in the Great Depression, some people made fortunes.
You bet.
And in the Great Depression and every recession we've had, that's when a lot of startups get going. And a lot of them are because people have lost their job, so they're forced to start their own company. I didn't even know it, but we were having a recession when I started this company in the late 70s. That's when Microsoft got started. That's when Apple got started. A whole lot
they
of
did company. Okay, so I hear.
Yeah. Yeah. I just had lunch with a guy. He said the best thing that ever happened to him was getting fired in a recession about 17 years ago. He lost his corporate job, and he panicked. And then he started just consulting and writing a little thing that grew into a book. And now he's sold over $2 million worth of his books. And that's just chump change because he's really made his money on this whole computer program that he sells to corporations. Just stuff he invented himself because he was forced to.
That's great.
But
so what about
always...
the average person who isn't an inventor? What would you say? Because we keep hearing that entrepreneurialism is the big thing to be doing right now, and you've just explained some aspects of it.
Yeah, and it's really no big deal. It's just finding out what you love to do. And figuring out how you can possibly support yourself at it. That phrase that changed my life that I talked about absolutely applies now. You know, there's always opportunities. There are always benefits in our situation. And we always have unique gifts. We were born with these unique gifts.
It's our authentic statement in the reality of life, isn't it?
Yes, yes, our authentic self. Each one of us has some unique gift. when we can see what that is, and when we can look around, and when we start asking, what opportunities do I have right now? I ask people how to think about what they really love to do. Think about their ideal scene. Ideally, if everything went as well as you could imagine, what would you want to be doing in 5 years? What kind of life would you want? Make that your goal, and then start taking whatever steps you can. Even if they're little tiny steps, and they will be little tiny steps. Even great success is built on just little tiny steps.
Now, maybe it isn't exactly the same, but sometimes I tell people, don't listen to the news projections on the economy and on jobs. Don't listen to any of that. And you sound like you didn't really listen to the external world about how you wanted to live either, did you?
Right. I think that's great advice, Veronica. I really do. I call the news should be called the bad news.
Yeah.
You know, on TV
and
paper. Here's today's bad news. just like William Randolph Hearst said, if it bleeds, it leads. Well, there's a lot of good going on. There's a lot of opportunity, always. There's a lot of brilliant people that are doing what you would love to do.
Right.
Think about them, how they did it, and try it.
And also, ideas are born in more than one mind at a time, aren't they?
Yep, they sure are.
Now, tell me this. You're in a publishing company, and I think that's very exciting. I've always loved books. But this is kind of a media time as well. Are you dancing? What is it you back?
Right,
to
learn to dance. Sure,
yeah,
love
yeah.
change.
Love
change, learn to dance.
So not small change, big change.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I think it's great. I think people will keep reading books, but we'll see. Maybe not, because you look at young people, they're just on their different things, different electronic things, and so... So, yeah, we're definitely moving in the direction of developing more and more e-product. We've got tons of e-books available on Kindle now. We're starting to do some e-courses.
And on what? Publishing? On
taking our books and adapting them to courses, like my book, Millionaire Course.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with a website called Conscious One and did this e-course so people can download it. It's the book in downloadable form.
Oh,
and
wow.
I love it because often our books are courses. Like in Creative Visualization or my book Millionaire Course, we'll literally say, take a sheet of paper and write this down. And people won't. I'll meet people that have read the books. They just read through them. And so on an e-course, it'll say, okay, in the following field, type in, your ideal seat.
Oh, that's great.
And some of them will even lock up until you enter there. You can't go further in the course.
Oh, wow.
You have to enter something.
Oh, wow. And people are actually doing it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We sold hundreds of them. It's done really well.
Oh, so that's kind of the cutting edge of what's going on here, huh?
Yeah.
What about DVDs and YouTube?
Oh, yeah,
what do
we do DVDs and CDs, and now we're getting them all online to be downloadable. And we did 3 enhanced ebooks, we call them, that had audio and video. And we sold quite a few, and they were up for a while, but then we had problems with the technology, so we're redoing those. But we'll have those back up where some of our books are... they're basically condensed in the text, but then we added audio and video links. So you go through...
So it's not a linear process like reading a book used to be. It's more like internet where you're zinging here and here.
Right, right. And you could skip around in it. And yeah, so some guy emailed me. He said he just loved listening to all the audio all the way through. He would just go to about every other page of the ebook, we had an audio. Like, he wouldn't even read the pages. He'd just hit the audio.
What would the audio link say?
They would usually expand on what the page is.
So it'd be like writing a whole other section?
Kind of, yeah. It was sort of my commentary on my words.
Oh, well, isn't that neat, hey? It's sort of like the breakdown after movies, where they break down and leave scenes in there that might have been deleted or so on.
Yeah. Carefully went through the book and... there were times when people said, could you expand on this a little more? Or if people had any questions about anything I wrote, that's where we put an audio link and I'd expand on things.
That's really, isn't that fun for you? You get to kind of play with it and things aren't just like written on tablets like they used to be.
That's true. I really enjoyed doing all that audio stuff.
So what do you think is happening to our intelligence, our intellect, as the world is changing? The world is online and we've got this e-stuff going on and these little balloons of thought that get answered as we go through the book. What's happening to our intelligence, do you think?
I think we are taking this quantum leap in evolution.
I do too.
And I really hope that the quantum leap will be in alignment with, the things that will really help transform the world and help clean up this world. I just heard a wonderful interview. I'd heard it twice on Fresh Air with Terry Gross.
I love Fresh Air.
Yeah, this woman who was a brain researcher.
Oh, yes.
I forget her name, but her book is called A Stroke of Insight.
Yeah, Jill Balty Taylor.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
She basically had her left brain knocked out.
Yes.
She was bleeding in her left brain. So for 5 weeks, she said she was in a state of total silence. She had no linear thought. And she was euphoric because it was all her right brain understanding. And she realized that's where Zen meditation, all these different meditation things will always lead you to letting that left brain stream of thought go and awakening to our wonderful right brain understanding that this life is a miracle.
It is, isn't it?
Every moment is a miracle.
But having our conversation with you and even watching her videos, which made me cry and made me very excited at the same time. Now I forget.
I said to my wife, because she can't meditate. She's Brazilian, and she's tried a few times, and just her thoughts are so rampant, which is true of all of us when we start.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, maybe I could just take a hammer and give you a whack in the right spot on your left brain to create the same effect that this woman had.
I bet she said no.
Yeah, I was obviously joking. I would never do that. But it is amazing that she had, her left brain so damaged, and she had a euphoric experience.
And the other thing is how many people absolutely loved her presentation and really got expanded as a result.
Yeah.
It's really been quite a life-changing thing, just her experience. And I know that's going to shift the collective as well.
Yes.
As soon as we change. Now, you've got here, there's a couple of things I want to do before we have to wrap up. Tell people what the three essentials of success are. I love that there's three. I'm like, okay, I can handle three.
Yeah, that's very simple. I tell people, when I started, I did just a few little things. I just wrote my ideal scene. Then I made a list of goals.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never done that before. Then I rewrote each goal as an affirmation. And then over time, for each goal I was affirming, things like, I am now creating a successful company in an easy and relaxed manner in a healthy and positive way, was my affirmation. The simple one-page plan would emerge.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd write one-page plans for each major goal. That's all I do. That's all I ever did, to go from poverty to real success. Then along the way, after taking those steps, it slowly dawned on me, you just need three simple things. And we've actually touched on them all before. You just need a product or service, and the key there is do what you love. Do what you love and find out how to work that out. How do you work that out? Well, step number two, find a way to market and sell your work. The key to success there is to have a multi-pronged strategy. Try this, try that.
I like that.
Realize, there's literally an infinite number of ways you can promote and sell your work. So try what's been done before successfully. If that doesn't work, try something brand new. Try something off the wall. Try the internet. Try the street corner, whatever. There's infinite possibilities. Just keep trying. I love the quote of Bert Lehr, the famous comedian and Wizard of Oz. He said, stay on the merry-go-round long enough and you're bound to catch the brass ring sooner or later.
And that's true, isn't it?
Yeah. And then the only third thing you need, once you have a product or service, once you keep going and going and going and finding some way to sell it, finding some venue for your art, or finding some way to get your product or service out there, the only other thing you need is good financial controls. Keep watching your costs. Keep looking at expenses. You can succeed beautifully on actually a very limited level of sales if you have your costs under control.
Hmm.
Those are all the only things you need.
And those are things that you share with your employees, too, hey?
Yep, we all talk about that.
So you have meetings. How many employees do you have now?
We have 18, and the level of business with the level of sales we have, most comparable companies have 35 to 40 employees that are our size.
Hmm.
And it's because of profit sharing.
And are they all overworked and haggard?
No, not at all.
Hmm.
I encourage them all to take vacations as much as they can and to really have a life outside the company and, you know, not to work too hard.
This might seem a funny question, but do you have daycare opportunities?
You know, we have doggy daycare here. We have like 5 dogs around. But now I haven't thought to ask that one. Yeah. Every employee now either doesn't have kids or their kids are in school and we don't really need it.
The age category that you got.
Yeah.
So, and then do you do long-term projections?
Yes. Oh, yes. Solidly now, we just do a year at a time.
Because mm-hmm. things are shifting exponentially, aren't they?
Yeah, they sure are.
So you don't really even know what your business... Like, if you, I said to you, what will your business look like in 5 years? I bet you wouldn't have a clue anymore.
Well, I have a... I actually have a... you could call it a 5-year plan. I have a 1-page vision of where I see the business in the future.
Oh, good. Can you share?
Well, I think it will be, the vast majority of it will be electronic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone...
Holographic?
What?
Holographic?
Well, maybe even holographic, right?
Yeah.
Right. I think definitely, you know, as television and computer merge, screens will, or rooms will just have big flat screens on the walls, and it'll be computer or TV or whatever, and you can go... And there would just be a vast library of electronic stuff you can download. So it would include every one of our books and courses and author seminars and a vast library of information.
It's kind of exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. And is your son like you? Have you got a son or a daughter?
I have a son, and yes, he's very much like me.
Oh, that's great.
He doesn't like mornings. He loves staying home. He's a lot like me.
Does he do music? Is he creative?
He plays music.
That's great.
Yeah.
And is your wife patient with all that, or does she get up in the morning, or what?
She's pretty good. She's pretty patient. She's, in fact, after years, and we've been together 17 years now. So,
that's pretty good.
But at first, she even used to try to say to me sometimes, you know, Mark, if you just get up an hour or two earlier, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, now she's more on my schedule. She sleeps later. I laugh at her. I said, and I never lobbied that she should sleep later, although I do always mention the benefits of sleep. She was just watching a thing last night about benefits of sleep for women in menopause, and I said, well, everyone, there are great benefits in sleep. And most people in our culture, I think, are sleep deprived. I think we have a type A workaholic culture, and most people are stressed and sleep deprived. So part of my mission is to not be stressed or sleep deprived, to be a type Z rather than a type A. I sleep a lot, and I don't get up till usually 11.
Wow.
And sometimes I'll get up at 11, have a cup of strong coffee, and then go take a nap.
Well, Mark, we're almost out of time, so I want you to give everybody how they can get hold of you. And also, I want to recommend to everybody that you look at Visionary Business, an Entrepreneur's Guide to Success. I think right now on the planet, this is one of the greatest tools. It's really wonderful.
Well, thank you.
And do you have business courses online, too?
Yes, I do have a course. They can go to markallen.com, MarkAllen. And there they can see all my books and audios, and I do have a mentoring course now that
Great.
We do through teleconferences. And
I might
emails.
Take it myself.
it's great. If I do say so myself, there's been many people with just miracle stories.
Are you giving the course?
Yes, uh-huh. I give it. It takes over 4 months. We do a teleconference almost every week.
Great.
And
people are responding well.
Yeah. I've had just wonderful stories.
Oh, that's so great. Well, I've really enjoyed talking to you. It's been very relaxing, and I've also gained a lot of sort of balance in my understanding of business. And I'm trying to remind everybody that we can create, that great people or great fortunes were made during the Depression, which you've already said.
Yep.
But we got to remember that and not buy into the status quo hoo-ha.
Exactly. Don't let the media get you down. There's
so I'll bet you're going to publish some kind of good news, too.
Yeah.
Huh? All right. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Veronica.
All right. Blessings. Well, that was Mark Allen. I hope he inspired you to have visionary business practices. I like this book, and right on the front, he's got a great picture of a guy who's kind of, I don't know, confidently striding out there. And it's from an aerial view, so you get the feeling the guy is magical and in the air somehow, and that's what we all want to live like, right? Giving our value into the collective and really moving it along. I really enjoyed that. So thank you again, Mark Allen. And he's at newworldlibrary.com or markallen.com. That's Mark with a C. This is Veronica Entwistle, and you can tune in to Live 365 and hear so far one of our 77 Paradigm Shifters archives. We're running them on Live 365 right now. There's only 10 running, and then we're going to go through a selection process and an announcement process, and you'll be able to listen to them as you wish. And if you'd like to feed me back on these shows at all, it's Veronica at Veronica Entwistle, no H in Entwistle.com, Veronica at Veronica Entwistle.com, or if you'd like a session with me, we find out a lot more about your soul journey and what's in the way and how we can release you and let you go and create the reality you want or help you create the reality you want. And I'll see you next week at 4 o'clock on Tuesday for Radiance by Design. And at 5 o'clock is Aravinda, who's a wonderful spiritual teacher. See you Thursday night for Jackie Salvitti and ET Healing and Exploration in Consciousness. That's 8 o'clock Thursday night. And I say thank you so much for listening to Mark Allen today about visionary business. And I send you all much love and say thank you so much for listening and take care of each other.